This episode was recorded in July 2020. If you enjoy this podcast, then subscribe to catch all future episodes.
Welcome, Super Kevin Davis, to the Old Footballers Club. It's a bad title. I apologise for that.
Hey, it's all right. Listen, I've been retired, I think, 5 years now, so 43. So I don't feel that old yet. Still one or two aches and pains in the morning, but yeah, still fairly young, I think.
You had a good run at it, didn't you?
I think so. I think from the age of 16 till 38, I think was, 22 years, playing at every level. Obviously, the majority of those fortunate to be in the Premier League, but some great memories along the way, obviously with the England cap at the end at 33. So I think it was one of those careers that had a bit of everything in there, really. It was a little bit up and down at times, but, I played some great clubs, got some great friends in the game, and it was one or two highlights along the way as well, really, yeah.
We'll talk about those shortly. Tell me about KCD management. What's that all about?
Yeah, I think I was, one of those players that was never quite sure what I was going to do after football. So I've done all my coaching badges. I've been working in the media now for a number of years as well, which I really enjoy. But I always kind of felt I wanted to do something myself. So I've had the opportunity to go and work for a few agencies and intermediaries or whatever you call them now. But I always felt that players would come to me for advice and help throughout my career. After my career, jobs become available. Can you get me in there? So, for instance, an old friend of mine was my physio at Bolton. Ringing. I like to help people, really. I think what it boils down to. So I get him the job at Crawley. I'm always kind of fixing people up and things. So it just seemed like the right thing to do. I went back to school and did my master's degree in sporting directorship. I've got my coaching badges. I've had the career. So I feel like I'm ticking all the boxes in terms of looking after players, making sure they get the right advice. Whether they're 16 or 38, and making sure that they're in a position when they retire that they're in a comfortable position and they're in a happy place, really. So there's lots of pitfalls along the way in terms of football careers, being rejected. I've had that two or three times. Not getting the correct advice. Wrong investments, and it goes on and on. So that's where I step in, really.
Tell me about the course at Manchester Met. What was it? What did you learn from? What did you get most out of it from?
Well, I think it's one of those, I'm in terms of personality, I'm quite sort of not shy, but probably not the most confident of people, really. And I think you find out a lot about yourself in terms of sort of your leadership skills. So it sort of peels back the layers a little bit. You have quite a few tests in terms of your personality, your traits, and you look at areas where your strengths and weaknesses are, and you can try and improve in those certain qualities, like self-confidence and all these type of things. So I think learning about myself was probably the biggest thing. And on the back of that, it gave me enough confidence to then go and apply for a manager's job, which I did at Southport and managed to get in my first interview. So it's all those kind of things that you haven't really done in life as a football player. That was my first ever interview, for instance, going to Southport. So preparing for that and all those kind of things, how to run an elite organisation, governance in football, and also that the people that came in and sort of spoke to us, from CEOs to all these people that have run the Olympics and the GB teams and the people amongst the cohorts. It was fantastic. It was difficult, don't get me wrong, to get through, but it's one of the most rewarding things that I think I've ever done, really.
How difficult is it for footballers, do you think, and for sportsmen in general, when you played at an elite level for so long, and then it's sort of, it doesn't gradually fall away. It kind of goes, you fall off the end of a cliff, don't you? It must be very, very difficult.
I think so. I think, fortunate enough to have played for so long and had the right financial help. So I was, the last 10, 12 years of my career, I was, putting money away as much as I can, making sure we bought a lot of properties. And it was like, I've been an income, so that when I retire, I knew I could be in a position with my wife and my children to be able to do something that I really enjoy, which is hopefully what I'm doing now with KCD management, the media stuff I do. So I'm in a great place. I feel fortunate to have the family surround me, but other players, they miss that dressing room. They find it hard to adapt afterwards. You do get a bit of media attention for a few months and then someone else retires, and it's kind of, I spoke to a few old players who, they'd lose that kind of togetherness and, just what a dressing room brings, the highs of football, obviously there's a lows as well, but some players do suffer, and I think it can be difficult for them, but it's down to the personality as well as the player. They it's hard to replace. That's why people want to stay in the game in terms of coaching, managing, even the media stuff, agency. It just keeps them in that game and involved because, as I said, they miss it so much and it can be difficult.
What were you like personality-wise dealing with the highs and the lows? Were you able to sort of treat both imposters the same, or did you suffer if things weren't going your way?
I never really dealt with being a substitute very well or out of squads. I found that quite hard.
I always used to get me.
I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, but as long as you're still, you know, I've seen players that will, you know, throw the toys out the pram and not react in the right way. And it's things I did as a younger boy I probably regret, but that's all part of growing up, really. I don't think you really mature until you're into your late 20s anyway, as a man. And having children certainly helped me in that regard and settle down and get the family life, because there are a few distractions. It wasn't as professional in the first sort of 7-8 years of my career, and it certainly turned around in terms of that. But yeah, I think it's just down to how you are. You know, I had a couple of managers that didn't fancy me and release me, and you have to bounce back. And it's the message I say to some young players now that I'm speaking to, that you will have rejection if you want to pursue that career. There's no doubt about it. And it's how you respond, having the right people around you, having the right friends, hopefully you have a supportive family, and something that drives you inside, I think, is really important as well. You know, when I left Southampton under Gordon Strachan and got the opportunity to go to Bolton, and, you know, I wanted to seize that opportunity so bad, the desire and drive to train, do 4 sessions a day, trying to impress, and then, you know, try and get back into football that way. So it's something that's inside you as well, I think. But no, hated being a sub.
Old time, but it must have been difficult because, I mean, you burst onto the scene with Chesterfield, you know, Southampton, and then big money move to Blackburn, and then you end up sort of on loan at Millwall. You must have been, you wouldn't be a normal if you weren't thinking, blooming heck, well, you know, what's happened here?
That was my first, I think, obviously I had to move to Blackburn, which, again, to that point, I've been involved in some great Chesterfield 4 years, great dressing room, people like Sean Dyche, Billy Mercer, big Andy Morris up there, Mark Jules, you know, great players in there, great manager, and that's all I knew, really. And then, obviously, went to Samsung, had a really good first year, missed half the season for injury, but the move came on the back of that to Blackburn, which was a bit of a shock, a huge fee at the time. And I'd gone from those dressing rooms to one at Blackburn, and I've stated it many times, it wasn't a really functional dressing room, it was a bit clicky, and ended up getting relegated that year because it was a poor dressing room, really. Roy Hodgson left, and it just sort of went downhill from there. So returned to Southampton, Dave Jones took me back, Glenn Hoddle came in, but then Gordon Strachan came in, and for whatever reason didn't fancy me as a player. So I was kind of, you know, I wasn't even getting the reserve team squad to, you know, do the shape against the first team. It was that bad there. So I kind of realised with probably 6 months to go that I needed to get out and play. So Millwall came along and gave me an opportunity to go and play a few games, get some fitness. And then obviously I knew the writing was on the wall at Southampton, unfortunately. So around 26, it was a difficult period. Both my parents were terminally ill at the time as well. So that was kind of a period of my life and career, which was, there was lots of uncertainty really. But again, having, you know, my wife and children around at the time really helped me get through that. It wasn't a dark period because I always backed myself to, and my qualities to get back into the Premier League. And obviously Big Sam came calling.
Well, it is amazing to look back. I mean, I feel like when I do these interviews, I feel like a stalker because I look at your Twitter feed, I look at all your goals, I look at all the moments. I mean, I've been watching YouTube all morning. I mean, some amazing players around you at different sort of periods, at Bolton Wanderers, the Djorkaeffs, the Anelkas, the Campos. I mean, how do you reflect on it now?
I think 10 years. So I think, you know, I've spent a lot of time in the Northwest with clubs, but that 10 years, I think Sam created something really special. I think in terms of the dressing room and the club, we were obviously overachieving at times, you know, qualifying for Europe, cup finals. I think we were only 3 points off the Champions League in the first couple of seasons I was there. But we had, like you say, some of the names there, Campos and Stelios, you know, won the Euros in 2004. Coaches, all these kind of people. I think we had 17 sort of different nationalities at one time, but it kind of clicked really well. And then that was down to Sam, the team that Sam built around himself in terms of his backroom staff, which was, you know, probably more than the players at the time. And we were just extremely motivated, extremely driven. Sam had a great way of, his man management skills were probably the best that I've worked with in terms of bringing the group together, working extremely hard together, but knowing when the right times were to go out, you know, go and have a beer together, lads, or go out with the wives for dinner. And it was a really easy place and a good environment for a new place to come and settle really quickly. And we just, I knew the moment I went there, that first week of training pre-season, that I wanted to be part of that. And that's why I worked so hard to obviously try and get that first contract there. But speaking to those players now, they're still, you know, Campos played for Real Madrid, Hierro, all these people have speak so fondly of that kind of time together because of what we had together as a group. And it wasn't just the first team, it was the whole club. So hopefully, you know, Bolton Wanderers are on the right path to getting that back. And it's going to be a long road back. But I was up there a couple of weeks ago and met the new owner, and hopefully with a new manager, they'll start to get some stability again, yeah.
How did your role in the team evolve? I mean, was it Sam saying, right, I want you to do this, or did it just sort of happen naturally?
It's a weird one, really, because, I mean, to the age of 16, I was always a central midfield player. So I always, you know, was happy to create the goals. And it's only when I went to Chesterfield that I got thrown up front and started playing up front, really, you know, wide of a three off Big Andy Morris or whatnot. And I think I had the injury at Southampton when I was 21, so my ankle was pretty poor in terms of the way that was being dealt with and didn't quite recover with that ankle for a while. And I think it just kind of evolved, really. Sometimes I think you just stumble upon things, and it was kind of so effective. I remember Sam saying to me, I think it was Man United away on the first game of the season, said, are you ready? You're going to start tomorrow. And I think, wow, you know, I've been here 6-7 weeks and earned that opportunity. And we lost 4-0, but we went on to have a good season anyway. And I played every game that year after, you know, literally being on the scrap heap, really. So, it was just a really good period for us then, yeah.
I know you must get fed up with it, but I mean, you Google Kevin Davis football and they go, oh, the fouled more than anyone else in the Premier League. More yellow card. I think Scholes and Gareth Barry reading have taken your record. Was that unfair? You weren't a dirty player, were you?
Committed, I'd like to say. Committed. But again, that was, possibly my upbringing, you know, we grew up on a big council estate in Sheffield, and you know, from the age of 7, 8, 9, I was playing with my older brother's friends who were 17, 18, 19. So it was a tough environment, but I loved my childhood where we lived. I was taking my kids back there and I absolutely loved it. It was a brilliant childhood where we lived, you know, just playing out in the streets, playing in the parks every evening. I think that's where I got my sort of 10,000 hours from in terms of what they're after now in the ECCC thing. But it was a... I think that was the way I was brought up. So it was tough. You weren't allowed to be crying if you got tackled. You know, my brother broke my arm once in goal and he's told me to play on. He's trying to put it back in place. So I think that kind of toughness came from that. But I just, yeah, I did enjoy the battle, the physical side. The teams that I played for were generally the underdogs against the top sort of six teams. So when you do play them, you raise your game. And obviously playing Man United for Bolton, there's rivalry there. And we had to try and unsettle teams. The Arsenal used to come and struggle against us because we just unsettled them, really, and that was kind of what we had in our armoury. So I was quite happy to participate and lead the way, really. Yeah.
You speak to Sam, and he bristles. I think the phrase is because you can't be labelled a completely long ball team when you've got the likes of Acocha and Campo and Hierro and, you know, Gary Speed, players like that. I mean, you were much more than that, weren't you?
I think we were, and I think we were quite happy for people to label us with that tag, you know, the rough, you know, rough and ready, you know, in your face type long balls. But I think when you break it down a little bit more and you look back at some of the goals we scored, I mean, we had some amazing players, you know, Stelios, Djorkaeff, Jufi came in, Acocha, Hierro, Speedo, you know, Kevin Nolan and myself had a great understanding. We had a kind of a real British core to us, but we had the flair of some of the foreign players as well. So we didn't mind that at all. We quite enjoyed it, particularly when we picked up good results against those sort of big six teams. So we didn't have a problem with that at all. We kind of used it to our advantage, if anything, yeah.
What was JJ Acocha like?
Yeah, really, really, just a really nice to stay behind him. You've probably been to Bolton's training ground. We had the snooker table and, you know, table tennis and all those kind of things. And we used to play a few frames of snooker after training. I think he was used to the smaller table and he was pretty useless at the start. But he was just a really nice guy. And I think he was really, I mean, you talk about this skill and you know, watching play is just a pleasure to watch, but he was really strong. You know, you couldn't knock him off the ball. Always smiling, never came in grumpy or anything, just a really top bloke and what a player. I mean, I remember going in for the first couple of weeks in training, you want him on your five-a-side team because he'd come at you with a ball and you just, he got past you somewhere and he'd just be laughing about it, not in a in an arrogant way, just because it was, where's it? And he's just gone. It was just, and he, you know, I'd try and stay behind and get him to teach me one or two skills and things, but yeah, brilliant footballer and just a really, really lovely bloke, yeah.
I asked to everybody the next quick series of questions. Your toughest opponent?
I'd probably say, I think John Terry and myself used to have a few battles, and you know, I came off worse a couple of occasions. He ended up on a stretcher on one, but we had that mutual respect, and I think we were both kind of cut from the same cloth in terms of liking the battle, you know, liking the fight and see who comes out on top on the day. And he would always stay behind and he'd have a beer or he'd give me some things for the charity I was running. So I respected him in terms of his, you know, the way he was as a competitor and as a leader. So I think when we played against each other, I always enjoyed the battle against John particularly.
There's an array of them. The best player you played with?
I think it's a tough one. I'd have to go with Matt Letizier and JJ, I think, in terms of ability. You know, been on all these coaching courses and you talk about talent and you just feel sometimes Robbie Fowler, the way he finishes, I had a debate with him about, you know, actually people don't realise how much time and effort he put into the finishing. But in terms of what those two could do with the footballing brain, Matt Letizia, I mean, you watch his goals back on his 100th club and it's just goal after goal, isn't it? Just spectacular. And JJ, just for, again, he's similar to Matt Letizia in terms of the way they played. So I wouldn't be able to split those two, really.
Favourite place you used to like playing, or the best venue you played at?
I mean, the old Wembley was, I remember going there with Chesterfield and it just had an aura around the place and we were fortunate to win that playoff game. And that kind of, I remember going as a kid and walking through and just, and it just, you know, everything was tingling. It was just an amazing feeling to be there. So the old Wembley was pretty stunning. In terms of club football, I think I always loved Goodison on a under the lights. St James's Park. St James's Park as well, and obviously Anfield at the start of the game. In terms of atmosphere, it's tough to beat. So there was a problem. And the Allianz was, in terms of Europe as well, was where we went and got a late draw and I scored my only goal in Europe. That was a special occasion as well for myself and the Bolton fans. So those ones probably, yeah.
When I've been looking at YouTube, that was a special moment, isn't it? When you look now at Bolton and Bayern Munich, I mean, what were your feelings? What were your thoughts looking back on that night?
I think it was just the whole, you know, getting to Europe for the first time in the club's history. I think, you know, as players and clubs, you want to achieve memories and create something new. Winning cups or qualifying for Europe is an amazing achievement for the club, you know. Bolton Wanderers, you know, a few clubs have done it since, but it was just an amazing experience for the players like myself who hadn't played any sort of European football. So we just relished every opportunity. You know, we knocked Atletico Madrid out one year, going to Marseille, obviously the Bayern Munich one. When that came out, the draw, I can remember the players, you know, running inside to see who we got, and that came out. It was just kind of, wow, here we go. I mean, it doesn't get much bigger than that for us, really. So that was just an amazing experience. And we went there and scored early on and rocked the stadium a little bit. Ricardo Garza scored and I think they went 2-1 up and took a few players off, thought the game was done and dusted, and then obviously I popped up in the last 7 or 8 minutes. So just, it's one of those things you just have to take in, really, and trying to pinch yourself a little bit. But it was a great, I mean, playing in Europe was amazing. Really enjoyed it.
The pictures, it's just great. They're captured. Your face and it's just the excitement that, you know, to whack it past Oliver Kahn. Just brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, again, it was just, I think we played really well in the game and we didn't particularly have a, I mean, at the time we were, you know, struggling towards the bottom half of the Premier League, so we were under a little bit of pressure to stay in the league, and I think any Bolton fans will tell you that we kind of sacrificed the game in Sporting because a load of us got left behind because there was only a few games to go in the league and we ended up losing on the weekend anyway against Wigan. So that was a shame, really, because, you know, in a different situation, we could have gone there and potentially gone a bit further and deeper into the tournament. So that was a bit of a taint on one of those campaigns, that we had to kind of sacrifice it in a way, which is the way it felt. But overall, just an amazing experience just to go and play in some of those clubs, you know, iconic football clubs was amazing.
And the great thing is you'll always be able to tell the kids you played for England.
Yeah, I mean, it was only the one cap, but I'd like to have had a few more. But I think, I'm not saying thankful that I got one, because I always felt there was periods when I was up there in terms of how I was playing, particularly around the age of 30, 31, I think I was in my prime. And obviously, the goals column probably let me down, but the way we played, you know, Heskey did it for years, you kind of have to sacrifice that side of it. But it was an amazing experience to get the call from the moment I got the call to getting onto the pitch. It doesn't get much better. So proud, you know, the family. I think there's a couple of coachloads of Bolton fans and friends that went down to support me as well. So yeah, I mean, it's just a brilliant experience for me. Grateful, I'd probably say, to have one, but a little disappointed I didn't go on to win a few more over the period of my career, I think.
Okay, now, how do people get involved with your management company? Do you approach them to play? People watching this go, oh, I tell you what, I need a good agent. I'll give Big Kevin a ring.
Yeah, I think so. Listen, whether you're 16 or coming towards the end of your career, I'm of the opinion there where I can help most people. We've mentioned it there in terms of what my career's had. You know, we have the financial side, the legal side, my experience. And I think more than anything, it's just honesty and being truthful to players. And agents will promise things just to get the player signed on and not deliver and then discard them for a couple of years. And there's so many, you don't have to dig too deep, really. There are a number of players that are really unhappy with the service that they receive, but that's the game that we're in. So it's just a message for me that if you're out of contract at the minute, you haven't got an agent, or you're thinking about changing agents, then, you know, get in touch with me. There's obviously LinkedIn, Twitter. Most people can get a phone number some way or the other. Just joined Instagram, but don't really know much about that. I'm just there to help and provide a service, and it's transparent, it's straightforward, it's honest, it's truthful, and you know, I'm not going to raise people's expectations. It's a reality of where you are in terms of your career, and let's work together and try and get to where you want to be. So that's the message. It's pretty simple and clear, really.